Hey, everyone. Welcome back for another deep dive with us. You know, we spent a lot of time on this show looking at kind of like the nitty-gritty details of the biblical text. But today, we're going to zoom out a little bit.
Okay.
And look at the bigger picture. Like, how is this book structured?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that structure help us understand its message? And specifically, we're diving into the book of Hebrews.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got this fascinating academic lecture that breaks down some of the key rhetorical strategies the author uses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll find this really interesting, even if you're not a biblical scholar or a preacher yourself, because a lot of these principles can apply to any kind of communication.
Absolutely. And you know what always strikes me about the book of Hebrews is how intentional the author is right from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. How so?
Well, like the lecture points out, he could have started in a lot of different ways, right? He could have, you know, kind of reminisced about the good old days, or maybe even like called out the congregation for their shortcomings. But instead,
he
goes straight to Jesus.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's a brilliant move for a couple of reasons. First, remember the audience he's writing to. These are Jewish Christians who are facing some serious persecution, and they're probably wrestling with doubt and discouragement. So starting with Jesus, the ultimate source of hope and salvation, it's like immediately grounding them, reminding them what their faith is all about.
Well, it's like cutting through all the noise and clutter to get right to the heart of the matter.
Exactly. And the way he does it is so powerful. He doesn't just mention Jesus in passing. He launches into this incredible description of Christ's supremacy, drawing on all these verses from the Old Testament to show how Jesus fulfills prophecy and surpasses even the angels in glory.
Yeah, it's not just name dropping. It's like showcasing his significance in a way that would really resonate with his audience.
Right. And this sets the stage for everything that follows. You know,
yeah.
The author's essentially saying, before we get into anything else, let's establish the foundation. Jesus is the cornerstone, the one we look to in times of trouble.
That makes a lot of sense. So he starts with this really powerful affirmation of Jesus, and then the lecture talks about this idea of shaping the moment. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Shaping the moment is all about how the author uses the story of the wilderness generation from the Old Testament to frame his audience's current challenges.
Okay, remind me about that story.
So the Israelites, you know, they've been freed from slavery in Egypt. They're on their way to the Promised Land, but they end up wandering in the desert for 40 years.
Right, because of their lack of faith and disobedience.
Exactly. They were so close to entering the Promised Land, but they let their fear and doubt hold them back.
I see where this is going. He's drawing a parallel between the Israelites and the Christians he's writing to, who are also facing hardship and might be tempted to give up.
You got it.
Hmm.
By invoking this familiar story, he's not just giving a history lesson. He's reframing their perspective. He's saying, look, you're not the first to go through this. Remember the wilderness generation? They had God on their side, but their own choices had consequences. Don't make the same mistake.
It's a powerful reminder that faith requires perseverance, especially when things get tough.
Absolutely. And it's so cleverly done. You know, by tapping into this shared cultural memory, he creates a sense of connection and makes his message much more relatable.
It's like he's saying, hey, we've all been there. We all know what it's like to struggle.
Yeah.
But let's learn from the past and not repeat the same mistakes.
Exactly.
So he's grounding them in Jesus, providing historical context. And now I'm guessing he's going to start getting into the specifics of what he wants them to do.
You're reading my mind. That's exactly where we're headed next.
So we've got this strong foundation with Jesus and this really compelling historical parallel. And now I'm really curious to see where he goes from there.
Yeah. So the lecturer calls this next section Holding the Congregation Accountable, which I think is a really interesting way to put it.
Accountable, like, for what exactly?
Well, he starts to get a lot more direct in his challenge to the audience. You know, he's not just saying, hey, remember Jesus, or don't be like those Israelites. He's really pushing them to move beyond the basics of their faith and strive for maturity.
Okay, so what does that look like practically?
One of the things he talks about is the need for deeper understanding, you know? He even uses this metaphor of solid food, contrasting it with milk, implying that they should be ready for something more substantial.
Hmm. It's kind of interesting that he doesn't shy away from pushing them. You'd think with an audience that's already facing so much hardship, he might be a little more gentle.
Right. But I think that's what makes this so effective. He's not ignoring their struggles, but he's also not letting them become an excuse for complacency.
So instead of saying, hang in there, it'll get easier, he's saying, use this time to become stronger, to deepen your roots.
Exactly. He wants them to become active participants in their faith, not just passive recipients.
And how does he expect them to do that?
Well, one of the things he emphasizes is the importance of becoming teachers themselves, you know, passing on what they've learned to others.
Wow, that's a pretty high bar to set, don't you think?
It is, but I think it speaks to the high expectations he has for them. He truly believes that they have the potential to not only grow in their own faith, but to help others grow as well.
So it's like a ripple effect.
Yeah.
You know, one person's growth can inspire and equip others to do the same.
And it's not just about teaching. He also stresses the importance of serving others, of putting their faith into action in tangible ways.
So it's holistic vision of maturity, right? It's about deepening your understanding, but also living it out in a way that impacts the world around you.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting to think about how this applies to us today. You know, we might not be facing persecution in the same way that the original audience was, but I think we can all relate to the challenge of moving beyond the basics of our faith and really striving for maturity.
Yeah, that's a lifelong journey for sure.
Yeah.
But it's encouraging to know that we don't have to do it alone. You know, we have this amazing example in the book of Hebrews as someone who really challenges listeners to step up their game and become the best versions of themselves.
Yeah. And you know what else I find fascinating about this section is how the author doesn't just issue commands. He also backs them up with really compelling arguments. You know, he's appealing to their identity as God's chosen people. He's reminding them of the promises that have been made to them. And he's weaving in all these threads from the Old Testament to show how their faith is rooted in something much bigger than themselves.
It's like he's giving them a pep talk, but instead of just rah-rah motivation, he's providing them with solid reasons to believe and to act.
I like that analogy. He's not just telling them what to do. He's equipping them to understand why it matters.
So we've got this really powerful combination of challenge and encouragement. And then the lecture goes on to talk about something called making it meaty, which sounds intriguing.
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting. The author of Hebrews isn't afraid to tackle some of the tough theological questions head on. You know, he's not just sticking to the surface level stuff. He's really diving deep into the core concepts of their faith.
And what kind of questions is he wrestling with?
Well, one of the big ones is the significance of Christ's sacrifice. You know, in the Old Testament, there's this whole system of animal sacrifices to atone for sin. But with Jesus coming as the ultimate sacrifice, it raises all sorts of questions about how the old and the new fit together.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a pretty complex topic, especially for an audience that's deeply familiar with the Old Testament.
Right. And the author doesn't shy away from the complexity. He actually embraces it.
So how does he make these complex ideas accessible to his audience?
Well, one of the things he does is he uses a lot of imagery and metaphors. You know, instead of just throwing out abstract theological terms, he connects them to something tangible and familiar.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. So one of the key images he uses is the high priest. You know, in the Old Testament, the high priest was the one who offered sacrifices to God on behalf of the people. But Jesus, as the ultimate high priest, offers a perfect and eternal sacrifice, bridging the gap between humanity and God.
That's a powerful image. And I can see how it would have resonated with his audience.
Yes.
You know, they would have immediately understood the role of the high priest and the significance of sacrifice.
Exactly. And by connecting Jesus to this familiar figure, he's helping them see the continuity between the old and the new covenants.
It's like he's building a bridge between their existing understanding and these new revelations about Jesus.
Yeah. And by explaining these complex concepts so clearly and compellingly, he's not just informing them, he's empowering them.
It's like instead of just giving them the Cliff Notes version of Christianity, he's inviting them into a seminar where they can really grapple with the core concepts.
Exactly. And that's what makes this letter so enduring. You know, it's not just a collection of rules or platitudes. It's a deep dive into the heart of the Christian faith.
And even though it was written centuries ago, I think there's so much we can learn from it today.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds us that wrestling with tough questions can actually strengthen our faith, not weaken it.
Absolutely. And it encourages us to be lifelong learners, to never stop seeking deeper understanding.
So we've seen how the author of Hebrews lays a foundation with it. Jesus uses history to provide context and challenges his audience to grow. And now we're seeing how he's also willing to dive into complex theology. But I'm guessing he doesn't just leave it there.
You're right. He's not done yet. He's got one more trick up his sleeve.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What is it?
Well, the lecture calls it tapping into the power of inspiration.
Ooh, that sounds good. Everyone loves a good inspirational story. How does he do it?
He introduces what he calls a hall of faith.
A hall of faith? What's that?
It's basically a whole chapter dedicated to showcasing biblical heroes who achieved extraordinary things through their unwavering commitment to God.
Oh, I love that chapter. It's like a highlight reel of faithful giants.
Yeah.
You know, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Rahab, and so many others.
Yeah, and the author highlights a really important point. These heroes weren't chasing worldly wealth or fame. They found fulfillment in serving God, even when it came at a great personal cost.
It's a powerful reminder that true success isn't measured by material possessions or social status, but by our faithfulness to God and our impact on the world around us.
Exactly. And by showcasing these role models, he's not just telling inspiring stories, he's strategically appealing to the congregation's desire for excellence. Yeah. You know, he's showing them that greatness is within their reach, not through worldly ambition, but by aligning their aspirations with God's purpose.
Okay, so we've seen how the author of Hebrews starts strong with this focus on Jesus. Then he uses history to kind of set the stage right. And then he challenges his audience to really like step up their game. And then he's not afraid to like dive into some pretty complex theology and then throws in like a whole hall of fame of inspiring figures. But I'm guessing it doesn't just end there. Like he's got to tie it all together somehow, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. He doesn't just want to inspire them. He wants to equip them to actually live out their faith, especially in the face of all this hardship they're going through.
Okay. So what does that look like? Like, how does he make this practical for them?
Well, one of the key things he emphasizes is the importance of community. You know, he's constantly urging them to gather together, to encourage one another and to hold each other accountable.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's like faith isn't just a solo journey. It's something that thrives in the context of relationships.
Exactly. And remember, these were people facing real persecution. So that sense of community would have been absolutely essential for their survival, you know, both emotionally and spiritually.
Yeah. I could see how being surrounded by others who share their beliefs would have given them strength and encouragement during those really difficult times.
Absolutely. And the author doesn't just say, hey, be friends. He gets really specific, you know. He tells them to stir up one another, to love and good works, to not give up meeting together, and to consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. You know, these are action verbs, he's calling them, to actively participate in each other's lives.
Yeah, so it's not just about warm, fuzzy feelings. Mm-hmm. It's about taking concrete steps to support and challenge each other to actually live out their faith.
Right. And the other key piece of practical advice he gives is to persevere. You know, he reminds them that the Christian life is a marathon, not a sprint.
This sounds familiar. It's kind of echoing that shaping the moment strategy we talked about earlier with the wilderness generation.
You got it. He's constantly weaving these themes together throughout the letter. You know, he's reminding them that just like the Israelites who wandered in the desert, they too are on a journey, and that journey requires endurance and resilience.
Yeah, but like endurance for the sake of endurance isn't very motivating. How does he make it appealing?
He does it by reminding them of the goal, the reward that awaits them at the finish line. You know, he talks about Jesus who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. And he encourages them to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. He's saying, focus on the end game, on the ultimate prize, and that will give you the strength to keep going when things get tough.
Yeah, it's like running a race with a cheering crowd at the finish line. You know, knowing that there's something amazing waiting for you at the end can really help you push through the pain and fatigue.
Exactly. He's giving them a vision of something greater than themselves, something worth striving for, something that makes all the hardship worthwhile.
So we've got practical advice, stay connected, persevere, and we've got this powerful reminder of the goal, keep your eyes on Jesus. Is there anything else he does to kind of send them out prepared?
Yes, and this might be the most crucial part. He reminds them of the source of their strength. You know, he tells them to draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings. And he assures them that God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it.
So it's not just about gritting your teeth and powering through on your own strength. It's about relying on God's grace and power to sustain you.
Precisely. He's reminding them that they are not alone in this journey. God is with them every step of the way, providing strength, comfort, and guidance.
Wow, this has been an incredible deep dive. You know, we've gone from attention-grabbing introductions to inspiring heroes to practical advice, and this really powerful reminder of God's faithfulness. It's clear that the author of Hebrews was a master communicator. You know, He skillfully wove together theological insights, rhetorical techniques, and practical guidance to create a message that was both inspiring and empowering.
I couldn't agree more. It's a message that continues to resonate today, offering timeless wisdom for anyone seeking to communicate with clarity, conviction, and impact.
So for our listeners who might not be crafting sermons, but are still interested in becoming more effective communicators, what key takeaways would you suggest they focus on?
I'd say there are a few key things to remember. First, know your audience. Who are you speaking to? What are their needs, their fears, their hopes? Tailor your message to resonate with them.
That makes sense. It's like that old adage, it's not about you, it's about them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Second, be clear about your purpose. What do you want your listeners to understand? What action do you want them to take? Don't be afraid to challenge them, but also provide them with the tools and resources they need to respond.
So inspire and equip. Don't just leave them hanging.
Right. And finally, remember that effective communication is not just about technique. It's about authenticity. Speak from the heart, share what you believe in, and let your passion shine through.
That's great advice. I think this deep dive has left us all with a lot to ponder. You know, how can we apply these principles in our own lives, whether we're speaking to a large audience or just having a conversation with a friend?
That's a great question to leave our listeners with. How can we become more intentional, more thoughtful, more engaging in the way we communicate? How can we use our words to inspire, to challenge, to encourage, and to make a positive impact on the world around us?
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep.